كذب.
Sorry, you want to speak now about Gittin and that Chav Gimel. I'll start with this story about this. When I was in high school, Shabbat Zachor, about twice as many people as the rest of the year. Excuse my voice. The Sicha in Shabbat Zachor, there was a Kavua Sicha, it always began with the following. The whole year round, people go away, they have all kinds of terutzim, a bar mitzvah, a wedding, a bris, etc., etc., etc. That was in Shabbat Zachor. There are no weddings, no bitot, no bar mitzvahs. For some reason, everyone can show up. Halavai, we make a sicha and tefillah before Yom Kippur, or talk about Talmud Torah Shavuot. We have so much buzz and people climbing the rafters like we have about this. What I seriously mean is, let's keep things in proportion. The most important thing, the reason we're here the whole year, is to become Avdei Hashem. Avodat Hashem is not only in Purim or in Shabbat Zachor. Purim and Shabbat Zachor happen to be a major element of Avodat Hashem. I think that they have a role and a function which is important, but it's part of a much broader whole, which includes tefillot day in, day out. It includes Tmidim, it includes Musafim, it includes Chanukah, it includes Shavuot, it includes Tisha B'Av, and so on and so forth. So before we talk about Purim specifically, let's just try to recognize and remind ourselves that this is simply part of a much broader question. You know what Misrati Sharim called Machovato Shadam Be'olamo. And Chovato Shadam Be'olamo was 365 days a year. Purim to be one of those days, but it's not the only one. And we should ask ourselves, what's the proper behavior, what's the proper approach to many other days of the year as well, including every Sheni V'Chamishi and every special day, etc. So, after the introduction, and I think it's important. I was asked to address the issue, I thought it was worthwhile addressing the issue of Chayav Nishna Mitzumim Puraya Adilo Yada, if you want drinking on Purim. Let me begin by dividing the topic into two. Okay, make two tzvaidin if you want. One discussion is, what do you think is the right thing to do, forgetting about any cultural framework of reference? You're living on a desert island. You happen to be in an island, Tayis Purim, you want to know what to do, should you drink or not? And that's a question which is independent of the cultural norms. And the cultural norms can influence both ways. They can give it a more negative connotation, they can give it a more positive connotation. First, you have to ask yourself, is it good, is it desirable, bichlal, for a person to drink in Purim or not, assuming there's no yeshivish tradition, there's no social norms, there's no parents, etc. What's the right thing to do with Gufosh Olinyan? Another question, the second question then is, having arrived at such a position or such a decision, how do you factor in cultural elements and the like? That's number one. Number two, which is also, I think, also important, the person should ask himself, what is good for me? Is it good or bad for me to do this or that? That's question number one, which is the more important of the two. Question number two, how do I accept what others decide? In other words, do I assume that what's good for me has to be good for everybody else? And if I drink, everybody else should be drinking, and if I don't drink, nobody else should be drinking? Or do you accept, or are you willing to accept that your personal decision may not necessarily be right or wrong for others, and even if it's right for others, how judgmental do you become if they do the reverse in either way? So that's the second point. In other words, what do we decide for ourselves? how we go and what, how we view others as well. So, having said all that, let's discuss the topic of Poshel Inyan. There's a vast literature about wine, both, of course, from the Greeks and onwards in Western literature, and Lahavdin Tanakh as well. Tanakh discusses the topic of wine in more than one place. You can find conflicting messages in Tanakh. Just take Kokodansi even, see what's going on. Look in Sefer Mishlei, who talks about it in more than one place, and various other places. You can also, in Chazal, find conflicting conflicting assessments of whether drinking is good or bad. The broadly speaking, the basic answer is, it depends how. In other words, and I'm talking at the moment, drinking for the sake of drinking. I'm not talking now about the fact that wine used to be juice once upon a time. I'm not talking about wine now, consuming it instead of as a soft drink. I'm talking about wine now for as alcohol. Under certain circumstances, Chazal considered it, Chazal would appraise it. Under other circumstances, to condemn it. And circumstances do make a difference. But to begin the whole discussion, it's Rosh Hashanah this year, and you should all have known the time of second almost by now. Stefan Daf Ayin Amud Aleph. Shmone Ruban Kasher Umiutan Yefeh. Vedain Derech. Travel. If anyone plans to travel on for Pesach or whatever. Derech Eretz is Tashmish. Osher. Okay, wealth. Because I also think Miuto Yefeh Rubo Kasher, Rashi says here, Miuto Yefeh Rubo Kasher, Shemavet Lomit Amud Torah, Umagbiel Levavo, Sheina, it's good to sleep a little, but not to sleep too much, Chamin, basically means bathing, Yayin, Vishina. So Yain is described here as Miuto, Miuto Yefeh, Virubo Kasher. This is a very statement, I'll get back to this later on. It's a very important statement. In other words, it's not that Yain is certainly positive, it's not certainly negative. It's rather, it depends in measure and proportion what you do with it. To the most basic point, we have within us different kohot. In other words, the human soul is not uniform, or it's not comprised of only one element. But we have within us various elements. We have the intellectual, the rational, the reason. We have also the emotional, the impulsive. We have contemplation, we have energy, we have action, we have a pensive mode of mind, and so on. And so forth. You have the part of you which is very individual, you have the part which is very social. On the one hand, man is a social animal, on the other hand, each person is an island unto himself. He has both a social and a subsistic existence. He's not, we don't come only in one flavor. We have within us many different elements. This is a point the Rav made time and time again. He identified particular elements, but the more basic point which is underlying his whole approach is that the Torah describes Adam the first, Adam the second, and he's Adam the third, and Adam the fourth, and Adam the fifth. It was within us there are various kochot which coexist side by side. That's Chazal talk about the man on the one hand is similar to an angel, on the other hand he's similar to an animal. We have within us the natural forces. We have within us forces of which are much more higher and elevated, and the physical elements, the non-physical elements, etc., etc. Now, part of the way we approach life, to a large degree, is based upon setting boundaries, and this is rooted, in a sense, in halacha as well. Like kedusha, kedushim to you, prushim to you. What's prushim to you? Meaning, there's a boundary. In other words, that you set a limit. You retire, you retreat from certain areas. And to do that, you have to, of course, you have to erect barriers and boundaries. And that's the idea. Kedusha, Kedusha always goes with Mechitza. Wherever there's Kedusha, you always find the Mechitza. You will never find Kedusha without a Mechitza. If the Mechitza's fall, there's no Kedusha. But to put it differently, Kedusha, more often than not, is rooted in the artifact. It's the artificial which you create. It's in nature, the nature has much less boundaries. And the Kedusha means erecting artificial, in the sense of an artifact, erecting boundaries between the place, the time, the vessel, the food, whatever, and creating Kedusha by setting aside. Now, it's true, Bichlal, you know, metaphysically, about the world at large, it's true something about us as well. We exist as individuals, and to do that, we erect boundaries between ourselves and others. And these barriers exist, and they have a crucial role. In other words, what's unique about me, what's special, is my personality. And if my personality is mine, and as such, certain things are intimate, which I won't discuss with you. In other words, I have one of the first times I spoke in Cleveland when I was doing Shlichut, some with high school kids, and it was a question and answer session. I expected to be asked about belief in God. It was clear to me that would be one of the first questions. However, basically they threw me a curveball. Instead of asking, should I believe in God, they said, do you believe in God? And it was like very direct, do you, what's your... So after like being taken aback for a moment, and it took a while to realize I was taken aback, I said to them, look, I'll answer the question, should a person believe in God? And the reason is, that's a theoretical intellectual question, and then you draw your own conclusions. But what I personally believe in, that's none of your business. That's private. I have reshut hayachid. I have my I love my wife. I won't express those feelings in public. Not because I'm embarrassed, not because I think negative with them, but it's because they're private. And that's the personality, the private feelings. And same with God, with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. In other words, whatever I feel about him, whatever I don't feel, that's private. So I can talk about it in theory. And each and every one of us, we have all our, whether they're positive or negative, we have a privacy, we have our intimacy, and these boundaries exist for a purpose. Where do these boundaries not exist? In close relationships. Husband, wife, to a lesser degree, parent, child, depending on which age also, of course. With close friends, but there are always barriers to a certain degree. I would say only, optimally, the only area that will vary is husband and wife. That's what Ishto Kegufo, as opposed to everything else, which is not quite Ishto Kegufo. It's neither children, nor parents, nor other relationships quite achieve that level of identification. And that's why this total exposure between man and woman, physically as well, but especially mentally, emotionally, it's Ishto Kegufo, and metaphysically in a sense. Normally, these barriers should exist, and they're there for all the right reasons. However, like everything in life, it's not that it's 100% or 0%. These barriers also create problems. They also have, we also pay prices because of them. Now, I spoke a moment about social barriers between people, the barriers the person has between himself and himself. There are certain barriers we have between ourselves and our personalities. Certain modes of expression which we don't employ. Nevertheless, we pay prices for that. In other words, we don't do all kinds of things for many good reasons. But nevertheless, by not doing them, we at times pay prices. To other barriers, to me and Kodesh Baruch Hu. There's a very deep tension between your autonomy and your individuality and your relationship with Kodesh Baruch Hu. If you don't try to preserve your autonomy, you will be swamped by Kodesh Baruch Hu's presence. That's what the mystics wanted. Right? There should be dvekut. I'll get to one at the end, don't worry. And a person will... if a person will surrender himself towards the Kodesh Baruch Hu, his being, capital B, his existence, will disappear. And therefore, we set up an autonomous area, which were different. Matter of fact, the Rav writes about this a lot in Ish Halacha and in other places. He was extremely disturbed by this, that the need to the need to relate to Kadosh Baruch Hu threatens your individuality, which is crucially important to him. And there's this constant tension there. How do I maintain my individuality and yet relate to Kadosh Baruch Hu? And his solution was, let's join forces with him. I will give him my creativity and the like. And so we have these barriers. No, to a large degree, they're crucial. So before, we wouldn't exist otherwise. If we didn't have these barriers to the Yisrael Kodesh Baruch Hu, so we would not exist. Chav v'chalak. Because his existence would smother us. Because he's so great with capital G, and we're so petty and trivial and mean and the like. So therefore, we have to maintain our autonomy and not to get too close with him. You can come to a friend, child, spouse, you can hug them, you can feel, he's too big, he's too great for us. So therefore we set up these barriers, and therefore it's only b'fnei Hashem, it's only b'fnei Dali b'fnei Atalmei, you present yourself, but he's transcendental and he's distant, and you are distant also. However, these also create prices. Distance comes with a price. There's a loss of intimacy, there's a loss of emotion, there's a loss of feeling. So rationally, I understand, Lirani Adam Bachai, but emotionally, you cry out to feel closer. Person recognizes, oh, I spoke about this in the last Thursday, was here. A child who's 4 years old will jump on a parent, will jump all over him, will hug him, will kiss him. A 24-year-old child or 44-year-old child can't do that. If you're 25, you're not going to rush your parents from behind without him seeing and jump on him and say surprise. And you're not going to just jump in his lap and drink some mirrors because mitchashek lecha. And if you're going to, you need a teirut, right? In other words, you... the reason is because we are autonomous. Because we differentiate ourselves. During adolescence, we differentiate ourselves. And all this is good, but there are prices. At the end of the day, the 24-year-old looks with jealousy at the 4-year-old. He feels the 4-year-old has the ability to express a relationship or to feel it and to experience it in ways that he doesn't have. And I'll be honest, I'm often jealous of 4-year-olds, how they can feel so close to their parents, how much you love your parents, how much you admire them, how much you respect them. But there's a certain, with age comes a certain distance. You analyze them a bit more. So you can help them, you understand. And this is everything we spoke about Thursday, whoever was here. But at the end of the day, there are prices you pay. And the same thing with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. You pay these prices that you can't rush the Kodesh Baruch Hu. You can't say you can't even say Kodesh Baruch Hu Anachum Avim Otcha because it sounds too childish. And you talk about the Kodesh Baruch Hu, God, and not about Hashem, because there's certain, and because it sounds less mature, less adult, comes with prices. And in life, there's this constant dialectic. You're trying to maneuver between these areas. Now, to a certain degree, but not totally, this corresponds, if you want, to the rational, to the intellect, and to the more emotional, impulsive sides of life. But anyway, what I said up to this point is true also regarding how we experience life in general. There are certain elements which are intellectual, which are rational. The other elements, which are action, which are, how come chevre play a frisbee all the time? Because they want to express themselves physically, and they want to express themselves through energy and through activity, and not only through the intellect. Otherwise, we'd be computers. In other words, if Kadosh Baruch Hu wanted us to express ourselves only through the mind, so he'd create us pure mind without a body. But he doesn't want us to be computers. He wants us to express ourselves through our bodies, through our. That's why relationships, parent-child, husband-wife, have physical expressions. Whether you hug your child, or whether husband-wife live together, there's a physical expressions which accompany emotional states of mind, which accompany. It's not all intellect. You know, a chavrusa is made based upon intellect. But a relationship is based upon interacting emotionally, impulsively, and also physically by letting your body express itself, and not only your mind. In other words, our bodies are not simply cases in which it's like a computer in which you have a hard disk or whatever, a chip inside a plastic case. This is not so. And our bodies are part of our identity, part of personality. That's why Bo Aleinu, person loses his mind. He's still the same person because he has other expressions and his body still is part of him. It's not a case for what counts. Okay, now one final point, and then we'll address drinking directly. There are many activities which we shy away from, not because they're negative per se, because they're negative in excess. In other words, by using them in excess, they become very dangerous, and you lose control. However, in moderation, or times with a drop only, they have value. You know, certain things, it's not we think they're negative per se. It's rather that they have their place if you're able to contain them. For instance, Chazal talk about gaiva. That you need a shmini sheba shminis. You know, and I think it literally or not, but you need a small drop, like an inkling of gaiva. Why gaiva is a very negative trait. If you have no gaiva whatsoever, there's no personality. In other words, you become... You're spineless, you have no personality, you have no self-respect, so you need a modicum of self-respect, of gaiva, to give you proper self-respect. And that's true of many other things as well. A person needs a slight amount of even cruelty, in order to be able to do these problems. We need all these things. This is the idea of the Shri Lassa Havan, the Rambam, that you're balancing different things to arrive at a certain balance. It's not that one is right, the other is wrong. It's rather you're trying to balance certain things. And, okay, now to get to drinking. All year round, to a large degree, we base our life, or many elements of life, upon creating these barriers and these boundaries, and not giving free rein to certain kohot within us. In other words, we try to channel them in certain ways. I said before, print sports is one of them, but broadly speaking, we tend to erect the barriers, both between our habits. Both we have, if you want, society creates barriers and boundaries. What you can do, what you cannot do, what's proper in society, what's not proper in society. Additionally, we create barriers between ourselves and others to protect our privacy and intimacy, as I said before. With the battery ourselves, the Kaddish Baruch Hu, and the like. Now, as I said before, these come with prices. The idea, in a sense, of wine is basically to let down the barriers, to remove the mechitzot, to allow a person to express himself more freely. That's the idea. In other words, if you ask what is positive in it, I'll talk about the negative as we go along. The positive is it allows you to basically to relax barriers. It's that's the reason that like schools, high schools, and the like use Purim a lot. It's for this reason. When I was in high school, the school had a very strict discipline the whole year round, and Purim, the Hashem went out of his way to show that he was different. It gave a different kind of perspective, and the whole year round it gave a different kind of perspective, because if you knew him. If you knew that in Chodesh Adar he behaved differently the whole year round, you recognized he had different qualities and capacities than you would have thought otherwise. And high school is a strict discipline, always needs an outlet. You always need a safety valve. That's why high schools use this all the time. But it's not a question of safety valve. It's a question is for your spiritual well-being. You want to be able to express once a year the. But you have to express once a year certain kochot, which the whole year round you keep suppressed. It was the whole year. Let me quote from the Gemara, which is, in a sense, makes the same idea. It's like this. It's Gemara Sukkot from Gimel. Bishah shekarat David shitin, when David HaMelech began to dig the foundations for Beis HaMikdash. Kafa Tehoma, the Tehom, in other words, the waters below, which of course are a metaphor here for all the emotional powers within, all the turbulence within us and the turbulence beneath the surface. In other words, all the water, the turbulent waters beneath the surface, they floated up, kafa tehoma, and they're about to flood the world. Ubar the mishta fa alma. Because if you take all these turbulent waters and emotions and you don't regulate them and you don't cap them, so you flood the world, because all these impulses, without being regulated, will go in 1,000 different directions and will cause great damage. By the mishta fa alma, Amar David, mi'ika diyada, yishol mikhtav shem achaspa. Does anyone know whether you can write the Shem Hashem on the chaspa? It's a piece of pottery. And why? Because he wanted to regulate, to control the waters by putting the chaspa on. He wanted the Shem Shamayim, throw the Shem into the water. In other words, but by capping it, in other words, the Shem was supposed to be the power, the force that would regulate and prevent the waters from going, from becoming destructive. We'll put the shame on that, and we will basically stop the waters from overflowing. Nobody knew. Because the dilemma was very simple. The dilemma was, do you cap these waters and then never have the benefit of being able to enjoy the energy, the power, the vitality of such emotions? But on the other hand, they're destructive. Or, so do you cap them and lose them? Or do you not cap them and then face destruction? Lekem on the yada. Or, to put differently, can you combine them with the Shem Shamayim? Amar David, called the yada l'mei v'no omei chanek v'gro. No, so David threatened people that he would demand an answer, because it would be more destructive not to answer. Nasa chitofa kavachomim atzmo. Chitofa mele kavachomim, and said to himself, What's a sota? A sota is the same thing. A sota is destructive. It's a positive force. You become corrupted and you become destructive. It's the power of love, love between man and woman, which become perverted and become destructive. What you do is you reinstitute harmony. You take shame, the Shem Shamayim takes shalom, and you do shalom b'nishin yishto, and you restore the harmony, and you recreate the balance, the proper balance. Kol achet kama v'chama, amale shavi. So he gave David a heter. David did it, and he capped the waters. V'nachit tahoma shitzaf egarmid. So what happens? The waters receded or went down into the earth 16,000 garmidim. It's deep, deep, deep. It became totally inaccessible. They no longer threatened the world, but there was no longer an ability to tap into them. You couldn't dig a well and tap into these waters because they went so far down, there's no way to get to them. Kichazi did nachitu va'amar kama dimidali tfei mirtav alma. David said, if the waters are so deep, there'll be no moisture in the world. We'll be able to dig wells, we'll be able to get the water which is life-giving. So therefore, he said, 15 Shem Alosim, elevated the waters to 1,000, from minus 16,000, with 15 Shem Alosim, he elevated them to minus 1,000, and there they remained. In other words, the point is as follows. If you repress your emotional energies totally, you dry up. On the other hand, if you give them free rein, they become destructive. So what you have to do is try to find a balance in which they're there, lurking beneath the surface. You can tap into them when necessary. However, they don't flood and destroy your personality all over. But you, on the other hand, you are able to somehow get the lachluchit, to get the emotional sense of them. We got moisture, but the emotional life and vitality that these emotions have, and this is the same idea. The whole year round, if we knock down the barriers the whole year round, we'll be destructive, and at many levels it will be destructive, and various forces that work in the human being are often negative, if not checked properly. So therefore, the whole year round, we create these barriers, society regulates them, the individual regulates them, and the like. However, there are times when it is worth tapping into them and being able to access them. I'll give you an example, once we use a halachic metaphor. The whole year round, we have Kramas Mesa Mikdash. Once in Yom Kippur, he said, Asher Mishtalech Azazel. Once in Asher Mishtalech Azazel, Azazel is the starkest, most primeval, harsh part of the desert. In other words, the whole year round, do things within vessels, with kohanim, with barriers. But once a year, you take the sin, you throw off a cliff on these jagged, rugged cliffs. And because once a year, in other words, you say, you do things gently. Once a year, you do things with koch, with force, with power. And if you do it every day, we have Avodah Zarah. If we do it once a year in Yom Kippur, combined with the Seir Pnimi, it works. And the same is true in a sense of Purim and Yeshivot. If every day would be Purim, it would be a disaster. It would be an educational disaster, religious disaster, and Chas V'Shalom, a physical disaster. But if once a year you allow yourselves to tap into other emotions and to appreciate elements all year round, you regulate, there are benefits, or conceivably there are benefits which can be derived from that. Now, I'll try now to take the list I had before to go back and relate it to this. I don't know how many of you, have been to Purim in the yeshiva, in this yeshiva or another, probably yeshivot. I would say the following though. Broadly speaking, the main barrier that falls, maybe not the most important, but the main barrier that falls, and by the way, lav dafka by drinking, with the whole atmosphere of Purim in its totality, creates the main barrier is social. People don't talk all year round. People are embarrassed to talk to their friends all year round. They have enough in common with them. People are afraid to talk to their rabbein. All of a sudden, rabbeim are afraid to talk to talmidim, and there are such things. It could be a talmid you know very well, but certain things you're afraid to tell them the whole year round. People are willing to open themselves up. In other words, it's the whole year round. I said before, with your wife, you always feel exposed. But others are barriers. But once a year, you feel close. It's not the only time in life. You feel closer to strangers when the chazon is danger. When there's a war or there's a terror threat, you feel closer to strangers. When a person is very happy, and a person's wedding, he feels his best friend of everyone he invited. Even though much closer than you feel the rest of the year round or the rest of your life to them. In other words, when you're overflowing, you feel barriers fall because, in this case, when you overflow, you just go over the barrier. But either way, to a large degree in Purim, what falls are the barriers between Adam Lechavera. I don't give a drush out Lech Knos and Kol Yehudim and Mishlach Lishtereyu, but it happens, and you feel, to use the word, you're much more mifalgen. In other words, you have much more sense of, you feel closer. In other words, the reason you see some people hugging each other here more than the whole year round is for this reason. It's because they feel closer, people do feel closer to each other, and they feel there's many, many barriers indeed fall. Barriers also between, as I said before, between Rabbein to Rabbein, between Rabbein to Talmid, Talmid to Rabbein, Talmid to Talmidim, and the like. And there is a lot of, it's crucially important because often a barrier that falls, life is never the same again. Because even if later on you go back to your normal organized routine, the fact that you know that you really spoke to a person from heart to heart without feeling any barrier between them transforms the relationship for the rest of the year as well. Whether or not you continue that way, or whether you just know deep down that you had a heart. I can tell you, someone in my machzor, I remember him crying his heart at Purim night close to 30 years ago. And we spoke at the time, and I haven't since ever raised the issue with him again. But I do feel, every time I see him, and I see him once every 10 years, I still have a relationship, because at one point they opened up. It was like, the sky's opening, you glimpse this beautiful vision, and the sky's closed again. But I haven't seen the vision, you know what's in the sky, and it makes the relationship entirely different. That's one major benefit. It's a Rebbe. I think it's true about. It's certainly true that Talmidim are able to approach and to discuss issues. They're often very reluctant, or even more than that, the whole year round. I think I mentioned this last year when we spoke. I had a mice a few years ago. That's many years ago already. So again, the Purim night, late at night, he came to my house with no self-control. I wouldn't say no self-control, but he was drunk and he was willing to express himself freely. And he came and spoke about a shidduch that he was going out with, and he didn't have the courage to speak about it. Not in Purim. Came Purim night, he spoke about it, and then I did what I usually don't do. In other words, I normally, whatever I hear Purim night, remains locked in a key and safe, and never. This case though is pikuach nefesh. I spoke to him 3 weeks later. He was extremely appreciative. We spoke 3 weeks later, and in this case, I told him to break off with her, and he was waiting to be told that. And Baruch Hashem, he married someone else later on, and a wonderful shidduch, a wonderful family, and I'm still in close touch with them. And but after Purim night, I have no idea where he would have ended up, because he would have married someone else who was the wrong shidduch, and later on, when he ran some turbulence in his life, I don't know how she would have supported him the way his future wife eventually supported him beautifully, and that's just an example. But he needed lowering the barriers to be able to do that. I remember someone years ago. He's a well educator nowadays, rushing of mital and stripping him of his shoes and socks. Why? Because he wanted all year long to have Rabbi Tal. He wanted his physical help of Rabbi Tal. He couldn't. Rabbi Tal was a bit of a forbidding figure, and apparently he had trouble just getting into conversations with him. Let me just explain. The Rabbi Tal that everyone talks about now in all the pictures is the grandfather. Rabbi Tal wasn't only grandfather. He was quite a forbidding figure at times. He needed to be very takif. And I asked my office a picture of Rabbi Tal waving his hand. And there's all the pictures of the grandfather, but he felt the years of cover from Rabbi Tal. And Purim he came and removed Rabbi Tal's shoes, and he felt close to him because I'm sure Adayom, now it's not that he'll tell you the story, I'm sure he's probably embarrassed now, but by Dudu gave him a tremendous amount of chizuk, they felt so close to Mital. I'm sure it happened the whole year round later on. I didn't come to entertain you with stories from Purim in the last 2 years in Yeshiva, because there are Yeshiva for Tam Ki Rabim hang, but basically they all, many of them, I spoke about barriers between Mendel and Chaveiro. It's up to you, Mendel, and yourself. I mentioned this last year also, but it's a very good example. Chaveiro, when the Lebanon warned, 2006, when they came back, they really didn't talk about their experiences, certainly not in a meaningful way, at least not to the staff here, to the best of my knowledge. And certainly I know some of them were very close to me, and they never came and spoke about their experiences. That's life. You move on with life. We saw some very difficult things, and we moved on. And I mean, there was one halachic issue that I dealt with. Someone had some halachic problems based upon contact with a dead person. But broadly speaking, they never came back and really spoke about it. And then 3 years later, Purim night, all of a sudden it all came out. All of a sudden, all of the experiences, and all the traumas, and all of everything repressed for so long, all of a sudden came out. And well, did I discover things about that I didn't know? I think they discovered themselves things they didn't know, and they were to process. We process information by returning to the same place. We don't always return there, and we need sometimes to be able to return there. I'm telling you about a few chevra. Rav Mital, the year of Rav Yom Kippurim, Purim night, he sat all Yeshiva on the floor and sang Kol Nidre. May he return them back to the world pre Mechamed Yom Kippurim. And I can't describe to you what trauma it was. Just even an idea. This yeshiva, which had 200 people at the time, lost 8 students. And now multiply that by the same ratio in the rest of the country, and you'll begin to see what Mechamed Yom Kippurim was. And we touched the whole yeshiva and brought them all back to Kol Nidrin to allow themselves to. Now, he couldn't have done that in Tu B'Shvat, he couldn't have done that on Yerushalayim. He needed Purim for that. He was an educational genius, but he needed Purim to allow that to happen. There are many such examples in which a person allows himself to tap into deeper recesses of the soul. In other words, the intellect doesn't create the barriers. You are able to tap into deeper recesses of your soul and to allow yourself to express yourself. And this is the value of what the Gemara says, that Yain is miyuto yefer. That could be people who cry and Purim about the relationship with Kadosh Baruch Hu. Could be those who cry about, you know, the Torah. You know, people who either learn the whole year and feel frustrated, or learn the whole year and don't feel satisfied enough, or people who don't learn the whole year and feel frustrated. I've seen all these examples. People just crying their hearts out because they feel a way, they don't feel satisfied enough in their learning, either because they blame themselves or whatever, but the mice, they feel frustrated. This frustration has to be vented, and it can't always be done in a sicha, you know. I'll take the sicha yeshiva and let me talk about it. At times, there are things you can express in ways which are, you have to express it, you just come and put your head and cry. And then, as I said before, our relationship with Kadosh Baruch Hu itself is a threatening relationship. And so at times you express your frustration, at other times you express your longing. As I said before, you can't jump in your parents from behind always, but if you do it once a year, it'd be great. If you had this mechanism to be able to do this once a year, to all of a sudden become 4-year-olds again. And this is what Purim is about. Purim, in a sense, is becoming a 4-year-old for the evening. And being able to return to the same place. There's a reason. It didn't occur to me until I thought about the Sicha today, but there's a reason why Hasidus emphasized drinking more than Misnagdim. And the reason is exactly this reason. Misnagdim emphasized Avodas Hashem to the intellect. The intellect creates barriers, distinctions, and Ish Halacha and the Tzachayim, the whole tradition, say, be Ovid Hashem for your creativity. And Dvekut means place your kochot at his disposal. For that, you don't want to drink. Chassidim came and said, rush to Kadosh Baruch Hu and hug him. The mystic said, come close. But you can't come close because it's threatening, because you're going to lose your personality. This enables you to make it easier to come close. And that's why I think deep down they... Of course, it's not proper. I'm not talking about 15-year-old Chassidim. I'm talking about people of much higher level. Okay, all this... But to sum it up, the whole year round, I'll sum it up with, to go back to the halakha I mentioned before. Kedusha requires boundaries, barriers, regulations, and the like. And that's good and necessary and crucial the whole year round. However, the other concept is called Tahara. Tahara means return to nature, return to your original self. And Kedusha always means use artifact, enter, leave nature behind, enter to the human artificial world. And Tahara means return to nature and go back to the original starting point. Normally, we focus on Kedusha. In this case, once a year, we focus on Tahara. That's Yom Kippur. In Yom Kippur, you achieve Kedusha through Tahara. And there are many, many halachot in Avodas Yom Kippurim which express the idea of Tahara. And in a sense, we do this Purim Kippurim. In other words, we attempt to achieve the idea of be obeyed Hashem through our natural impulses. Okay, now this brings me to point number two. Up to now, this is point number one. Point number two is Chazal say, Nichas Yain Yatsa Sod. It's called Sanhedrin. Yain Yinita Mishinim Otiyot. The Gematria of Yain is 70. The Gematria of Sod is 70. Nichas Yain Yatsa Sod. And this is what I was talking about until now. the ability to. Well, what does sod mean? Sod. Why don't you tell a secret to somebody else? Because you differentiate. You're different. There are barriers. You do tell secrets to your wife because there are no barriers. But differently, the concept of sod disappears because it dissolves in the relationship. Sod means if you wanted the same, you should talk to Guru. There's no sod. I don't have secrets for myself. Now, so Nika saying it now, or put differently, I don't have conscious secrets myself. My subconscious has secrets, which is why you drink to release those, to tap into your inner self. Now, Nika saying it to sod means, same way you tell your wife everything you know, as I said before, you roll the barriers to your friend, because there are no barriers. You feel like chaviroki gufo, if you do it properly, or raboki gufo, etc. However, there's a huge caveat here, which is, what is sod you're going to release? What kind of sodot are you walking around with? Some sodot are better not released ever. Some sodot should be locked up and never released because they're not worth hearing. So the question a person has to ask himself always is, what kind of sodot do I have? And for instance, high school kids, I don't think should be drinking at all because their sodot are not worth hearing. Or put differently, their sodot are immature and adolescent and they should remain... They should remain raw material to develop and become more mature, and then, if done properly, they will eventually blossom and have sodot. But at the moment, they're not ripe to release sodot. And a person should only attempt nikasen yetzer sod if he has a sod which he won't be embarrassed about a day later. With any sod, anything you say in Purim, or any, that if you talk 3 days later, you feel embarrassed, you never should say in Purim either. Purim is about, as I said before, it's about reaching inner self. It's not about saying things that conventionally you can't do it because of all kinds of social conventions. As we things which are true, and something you tap into your inner self and you're feeling true. Anything you say in Purim, which you feel you should be saying, which 3 days later you'll be very embarrassed, you never should have said it in Purim either, and never you should bring yourself to a situation which you'll be saying it. So the person has to ask, now, one of the reasons I feel it's legitimate. Just like the yeshiva allows drinking and high schools don't, because at the end of the day, yeshiva is a place in which the focus is avodat Hashem, and if everything if the focus is avodat Hashem, things revolve around Hashem, like if Shabbos Zochar Night, Rav Meidan is so concerned with the tithing of the Chabeh Met, so if you drink, you'll be concerned with the same thing. And the yeshiva set up, not say everyone here is tzaddikim and kedoshim and torim, not say everyone's like Rav Meidan, of course. Excuse me. And I'm not, I'm also not saying, I'm also not saying that everyone here in the room, okay, it's still there. Anyway, I'm not saying that. Let's say every kinshan alpha drinks from Purim night is like, is the madrega that everything he thinks about is always about Hashem. What I am saying, though, is. Thank you. Of course, my mouse has its purpose, of course. Well, that's right. I'm not saying to everyone who drinks in Purim his whole life, he vows on Kadosh Baruch Hu, and he's not the level the Rambam describes in Perek Yuchas Tshuva. However, Yeshiva's institution focuses itself upon emphasizing Avodat Hashem. Public life, the public sphere here, revolves around the Avodat Hashem, and therefore what expresses itself usually in Purim, more often than not, is exactly this. In other words, its issues, what we express Purim night, what you observe Purim night, are people express themselves in public after they drink about the issue that the yeshiva focuses upon and devolves around. I've been in yeshiva for give or take 30 years in Purim. I think I heard maybe all the years, maybe one mildly inappropriate remark, inappropriate, I don't mean legal papers, I mean one, maybe one remark which is out of place. Besides from that, everything was, the vast majority was impressive, and the minority was neither. But, like I say, it's a sod within a context of yeshiva, which is focused upon, without the shame, at the end of the day, no matter how much we laugh at ourselves and how much we're cynical ourselves, at the end of the day, and you come and spend a year or two, if you come to Hesder, many more years, because you want to go on with Hashem. You come here because, at the end of the day, you spend day and night listening, talking about Avodat Hashem and talking about Yisrael Torah and Talmud Torah and Avodat Hashem and Tefillah and Gemut Chesed and Torah. And because the Purim night is either the satisfaction or the frustration where you are on this continuum. And as such, the Sodot are worth hearing. Sodot is not worth hearing. The person wants to talk with the Red Sox, let him drink someplace else and not, we're talking about Sodot, which belong to, Nichas Yayin Tzah Sod, what the institution is all about. This is, and if you have no sodot worthy of hearing, so do us a favor and don't, and don't proclaim them. Up to now, I said before, when I began, I would talk about the issue in isolation. Forget about the social issue, and that would do stage B. Now to talk about the negatives, not the pros, but the cons. Because as I said before, Miuto Yefeh Ribo Kasher. First of all, it's not Miuto Yefeh. And I said before, it's an individual question. A person doesn't have to feel neither peer pressure or bichlal. They just have to do this. In other words, I'm willing to, whoever wants a heter because of the Gemara and Megillah, I'll give it to him on the spot. In other words, there are many other chumis you should adopt before you adopt chayvinish. If a person is concerned about halacha, he can drink ktsat or temeher gelo. He's yotze at night. There's no mitzvah whatsoever. In other words, there's no halachic problem not drinking, and there is no spiritual problem in not doing that, nor no personal psychological. If you don't feel, don't. In other words, it's. I told the Israelis the other day. Chazal say about certain things, if a person, if you see a baller amis, so kalayim pao gimbo. But if you ask a beis nishal, tell you not to do it. Why? Because if you ask, it's signs you're not, you don't really feel it from within. If you don't feel the need to do it, there's no need whatsoever. There's no, it's not a mitzvah kalayim tefillah and taking a lulav. It's simply a medium. It's simply an aid for a person who feels to help him. If you don't, there's no need whatsoever, and there's no obligation, there's no don't feel pressured and the like. What there is a mitzvah is to express your neshama with besimcha. In other words, sense of overflowing of joy and happiness, that's part of Purim. But there are many ways to achieve it. Someone said years ago, I feel a bit awkward quoting this, but I'll say it anyways. Someone said about my father, Rav Lichtenstein, not zich lishtot. Why? Tochok kibaro. He feels the same thing without drinking. So why should he drink if he feels the same thing? He doesn't have the necessity. And see, if you, for whatever reason, you don't feel the desire or the need, so don't. There's no. You don't get a higher mark on your transcript when you leave here if it says you drank or didn't drink on Purim. And that's point number one. Point number two is it's a mean. It's not an end. And like everything else in life, it's individual. And the same way tefillah, some people, a fast davening is better for them. Some people, slow davening is better for them. Some people, it's better to daven because you can look at nature. Other people, it's better to do things the way it's best for you. That's number one. Number two, as I said before, the idea here is to enhance Avodat Hashem. Anything which will injure or harm the Tzemel Elokim within a person, by definition, doesn't enhance Avodat Hashem. In other words, if it allows the human and the noble within you to express itself, so that's legitimate. And that's the issue I spoke about before. But if it causes a person to degrade himself in terms of Tzelem Elokim, so it doesn't elevate him, it degrades him. What I mean is, if you drink in order to release some force, some of the barriers, some of the inhibitions, b'vakasha, provide your sodata with hearing. Do not, anyone who drinks, and like every year we have two, three chochmalogim who drink a huge amount in the first 10 minutes and end up vomiting and basically degrading themselves. It's not only a problem that you feel disgusting, it's a problem that the Tzelem Elokim within you is degraded. There's a human dignity which is abused by treating them. The Gemara says that personal hygiene is considered Tzelem Elokim. That a person has to be careful about his personal hygiene because the Kadosh Baruch Hu created him. You need proper maintenance of Kadosh Baruch Hu's handiwork. And if there's Tzelem Elokim in your face, you have to wash your face like going for davening, because it's part of maintaining probably Tzelem Elokim. So any drinking which degrades that, be it physically or be it psychologically, is possible by definition. That's because it's supposed to elevate the Avodat Hashem, not to come and clash with the Kadosh Baruch Hu's creation, with Kadosh Baruch Hu's work. Okay, now all this in one, in a nutshell, Rambam says the following: the whole year round, a person should have boundaries, should have mechitzot, should have kedusha. It's totally legitimate and serves a purpose to be able to have a day a year in which barriers are removed, in which you let kochot of the tahor flow and rise, and you tap into those floodwaters beneath. And not only you don't only cap them with the Shem Shammayim. It's just a positive purpose. This can be achieved in many ways. It can be said before, through danger, through simcha. Drinking in time can be a medium which allows it. If a person feels it, will indeed assist him. If he doesn't feel so, there's no need. Provided that A, he doesn't do anything chas v'shalom, which will, I'm not talking about endanger himself, but which is kavachomer, ben v'lach shakavachomer. But also, we should degrade his humanity, his Tzelem Elokim, and the like. And B, whether he's so dope, with hearing, and so dope out of the realm of Avodat Hashem, of his aspiration as a human being, how he wants to be a better person, how he wants to be not, Narishkeit, and all kinds of shtuyot. Okay, all this is in isolation. V'abochei yivchar. And it assumes a certain maturity. Now, we assumed in the past, we continue to assume a certain maturity in our Talmidim. I'll admit that the more the Israeli high school system becomes less mature, and for various reasons, which it's not time for a lecture now, but Israeli high schools, it becomes more problematic. Nevertheless, at this point in time, and I don't guarantee what we'll know what things will be like 10 years from now, at this point in time, we still assume a certain maturity in our Talmidim that gives us the self-confidence, and I mean the self-confidence because it requires some confidence in Talmidim to it gives self-confidence to let them be Baal Tefillah and Belag the whole year round. It gives self-confidence to trust them also when they drink on Purim, and that's been the yeshiva's policy. Well, this yeshiva and many other yeshivot, but it's predicated upon our belief that they're mature and that the values we give them the whole year round and the maturity we try to instill them the whole year round and the mode of thinking that we the whole year round to instill are able to withstand the test of drinking and Purim as well. If not, A, we won't allow drinking, but B, we have to go back to the drawing board and rethink our whole educational policy. But at the moment, we do feel that's justified and Bezrat Hashem, hopefully, will continue. Now, this creates some of the... Now, up to now, I haven't mentioned one thing, which may be the elephant in the room, which is alcoholism. Now, and because that is, as I said when I began, that's to do not with, if you're on a desert island, that's to do with contemporary social conditions. But now I'll try to distance. Obviously, alcohol is addictive. If we thought that... Now, Purim Yeshivot exists because it's in isolation. In other words, people, Purim is basically designed for people who don't drink anything all year round except for Kiddush. And therefore, Purim is the same way. I won't blow shofar and and Chanukah. And I won't take a lulav and Tu B'Shvat, so there's no chance of catch me drinking and Tu B'Iyar, because it's each chag has its cycle, and there's no, it's part of the chag. It's not part of a social milieu or social forms of or forms of social behavior the year round. Now, as long as this was so. And Israeli society, until recently, was so. Alcoholism in Israel is a relatively recent problem. In the past, it was almost non-existent. Around 20 years ago, I walked into a hardware store, I saw a drunk person, and for a moment I just thought, oh, I feel like I'm back in New York. And I haven't seen a drunk in Israel in 20 years. Obviously, when you don't have such a problem, it makes things easy and simple. But there's no chashash of it spilling over Tati Mashma to the rest of the year. Israel's changed. Forms of entertainment have changed over here. It's more of a problem than it was in the past. And it makes it a bit more sensitive. And I spoke to the Israelis last week about the same topic, which would be unthinkable to 10 or 15 years ago. Because their forms of entertainment have changed. And the chasha, in other words, simply put, if people drink not only in Purim, so you now have a question whether they drink in Purim, whether they're drinking because it's Purim, everything I described before, but the idea of trying to be over the Hashem b'simcha, or they're drinking because they drink when they go out on other occasions. It's a concern. And the person should ask himself, and the person believes that he drinks in Purim because simply he likes drinking the whole year round, he shouldn't go near and chas v'shalom on Purim even less than the whole year. If a person believes, and he can back as he should, that the whole year round he doesn't drink, and the whole year round it's a goyish form of behavior, and good Jewish boys, I should steer clear of this. But on Purim, it's much simpler. The person feels that this is part of his general enjoyment of alcohol, say chas v'shalom should drink in Purim. Shouldn't go for alcohol. Now, we're not going to give a questionnaire and ask you how much do you drink the rest of the year round or not. But I'm saying before, we trust people's maturity, but that every person should be asking himself that question. Is avodat hakodesh or chilul hakodesh? That's really the question. That's on the personal individual level. On the social level, the same chashash that drink in Purim will be construed or be as legitimizing drinking the whole year round. So what I could say is the following. It should not be assumed as such. It should be clear we're talking about two different phenomena. If at some point we'll feel chas v'shalom that this will impact upon society in such a way that will legitimize people becoming alcoholics, we'll cancel Purim. But at the moment, I hope and feel that, at least in Israel, that's not the situation. And I'll talk about the culture gap in a moment. At the moment, you don't feel it's such. But much more, in other words, the clearer the line between Purim and consumption of alcohol is the whole year round, the better off everybody is, the person, society, etc. All I can say is encourage yourselves and to realize that we're talking here about something which is different. Hopefully it's different because of the content, because of the motivation, because of the context. And at the moment, once more, I recognize these things can change. At the moment, I feel, at least in Israel, in the society we're in, we're still within the confines, and others can disagree. But at the moment, I think we feel the yeshiva, at least, that it's still safe, and we're not contributing to alcoholism in society in general. We feel different from other parts. We'll change our policy. This brings you to the issue of the culture clock and gap. As over the years, and it's become clear there's some of a culture gap between Americans and Israelis. And it's because my impression, at least, is that alcoholism is more of a problem in the States to begin with. Quote unquote substance abuse, Baruch Hashem, Hebrew, there's no word for that yet. It's still. you can't reach that stage in which it's so prevalent that you need such that you come, you know, that you get this broad category. That's probably the main reason. There may be other reasons as well. Be what it may, Israelis treat drink differently than North Americans do. I don't want to talk about the Commonwealth and any Musaga. But at least Israelis treat differently than North Americans. Some of the hysteria, if you want, the sense that you need zero tolerance, because otherwise it's a very slippery slope. Tati Mashma is that's not the feeling here in most. The feeling here is that you don't need a zero tolerance policy because we're able to contain things. This therefore creates a culture gap here between what you used to in high schools and certainly right after high school 30 years ago, you go and put him to your Rebbe's home and he would offer you would drink with him. It wasn't of course in the States it's a whole different story and a whole different mindset. That's a given. Now the question now, and here the question here is how do you treat a culture gap? And here also the following: it's in context, it's appropriate. When we talk about culture gap, you're not saying that one is right, the other is wrong. I had a British teacher in Hebrew University, a course in linguistics. He once said, "You know something? Americans in America make a lot of sense. It's only the rest of the world that look ridiculous." There's a lot of truth to that. In other words, seriously, it's true for Israelis and Brits as well. Don't kid yourself. Every culture has its own particular logic, and in context it makes sense. It's out of context that you stick out. And of course, having tourists don't mind sticking out because they feel their context is the home they're coming from. In other words, if you're local, you feel, if you come to a place for a year, you want to feel different than the locals. If you come for 2 days, so you feel that's not my context. My context is my home, so you don't mind feeling out of context. And therefore, it's not a question therefore being right or wrong. The question rather is, when you come to a different culture, how do you function in that culture? And every culture, at the end of the day, every culture at least you think is decent, has its best, its checks and balances. Americans are different than Israel's, and Israel's different than America's, and both are different than South Africa and Australia, and so on. And therefore, the question here is not simply whether, in other words, Yeshiva is not saying what goes on in America is wrong, and Americans should accept Yeshiva on its terms, meaning it's Israeli institution. To put differently, when we interview you in December of 12th grade, and what Yeshiva are you considering? I want Yeshiva, which is Israeli. Right? We hear this, I'm sure everyone here said in some form or another in his interview, I want to go to Yeshivot, which are Israelis, and etc. So probably go to Yeshiva, which are Israelis, mean that there's Israeli mindsets. It could be in expressive of many different things. You saw some of the tension here in Shabbat Zachar over the topic of sensitivities. And there's nothing like satire to illustrate a point. Part of it is exactly this point, meaning the willingness to accept Israelis on their terms. If you come for a year here, so it means accepting many things. It means accepting the behavior, the doing. And believe me, they accept you also in many different things, which they're not used to. Part of it is Purim as well. In other words, don't ask yourself, is this what I'm used to? But rather, you come for a year to a different culture. Try to. I don't mean to apologize. I don't mean like go to Kotel or Shana Rabbah because it's an interesting Israeli experience. And then like I saw that. It's rather you're in a place. Try to understand it on its own terms and try to experience it. And part of Avodat Hashem Avodat Hashem in the yeshiva wants to Purim also, except the yeshiva, I think, because this is, it has its inner logic, and in this country, this is the logic that works. It works. Last year, when we had the sicha post Purim, one of the Israelis came over to me after remember the American group there last year, and he said to me, "Anachnu mekavim sheharav lo biten et Purim shana ba'a." I said, "No, doubt he don't." The Israelis have their cultural needs and norms, and it's what's right. As long as we don't feel that they're in the wrong place, they're in the right place. The fact that you're accustomed to it, so it's maybe the Sion. To be open-minded enough, because it's something different. Even if back home you were told that this is no Rav Hayom, I think over here it works. So accept the institution and the culture on its terms. And I'd like to point out two other things here in light of last year's experiences, in order to get this point across. Last year, so many Americans were very surprised to see me down, and myself, I don't remember myself or not, sitting on the floor. Okay, now, in Israeli context, it's meaningless. You can see people sit on the floor all the time. I mean all the time. Actually, I mean, not just on the floor, in Tewish in this house. But, if you're a Tewil or whatever, everyone is Yeshiva, from the Rosh Yeshiva down to the last of the Shana Aleph kids. There's been hundreds of Tewil. Anyone in Tewil will sit on the floor and not, and doesn't expect to bring a beach chair with him to a Tewil. And, we've all been through the army, and, believe me, the army is a place in which, decorum is not the strong side of a good deal of life. For very good reasons. But everyone here has lived in Tanei Sadeh, without going into details. But living in Tanei Sadeh means no one feels. You know, in Hebrew, I don't think there's a word here for decorum. Anyways, it's serious. You've talked about mechubadut maybe, but mechubadut is not quite the same thing. So don't be surprised. If you see Rosh Hashiva drunk, if you see him sitting on the floor, don't be surprised. It's not. It doesn't have the connotations. It doesn't have the cultural connotations that you give it, because it's a different culture. It's a less formal culture. It's different simply, and therefore may Rosh take that into account. In other words, everything that shocks you shocks in context. I'll just give an example. You see one of the ramen drink from a bottle. So everyone who's been to the army here has drank from thousands of bottles, and the fact that he doesn't have a glass, it's meaningless. Don't put things into the context that you're familiar with, but rather try to take them in local context. Number one. Number two, I said this last year, I hope no one's offended, I'll say it again. Sufosh Davar, life in Israel, to best my understanding at least, is more, it confronts certain phenomena more directly than in the States. It's most prominent when you revolve the issue of death. You go to an Israeli funeral, the mace is there, and with a talis or tachrichim, no casket, not covered up. You can clearly see the outline of the body. My father-in-law was nifter a month ago. My 15-year-old daughter was in the front row at the levaya because her grandfather, and it was there was no attempt to create a sterile environment in which you don't confront. She was standing there. The shape, the figure of the body was clear. And as the kavura, in other words, I was once in my life in South Africa. When they came, like 300 yards from the kever, everyone stopped. And only the kever kadisha went to the grave itself. Now, you're an Israeli funeral, everyone's there digging and shoveling, but it's true of many other, this is where it's most prominent maybe, but it's true of two other phenomena. I think drinking is one of them. In other words, at the end of the day, drinking means more raw emotion. It means some of the raw sides of life. It's not only, it's less sterile. It's expressing emotions which are more rough and tumble, if you want. I think Israeli culture is more like that than the American culture is. And I said before, there's certain it's a different mindset, and as such, I think it's part of the shackles. I think part of the shackle, in previous years, was because it wasn't only because we don't drink in the States and there's zero tolerance. It also was because we were confronting one of the chevres said to me last week, "I've never seen a drunk person." Like something to be scared of, like something like it's a release of these forces and powers that are intimidating and scary. I think it's part of the same phenomenon, in other words, that certain life forces which are not confronted with, and that's why I think part of the shock last year was also because of this, like being confronted with more direct primeval forces than normally. American culture tries to isolate you and sterilize you from. Maybe I'm mistaken. If so, I apologize. But I tend to view it like that, and therefore I think it's part of the shock is simply culture shock. And for that, I said before, this part of going to different culture is also experiencing such things. Okay, the bottom line. In Shabbat Eretz Yom, we trust the maturity of the Talmidim. We allow them to drink. We don't, of course, force anybody. We do allow them. Rebbeim drink as well. There's no. It's predicated on the assumption that there's a certain value once a year to be able to lower boundaries and to allow certain impulsive forces to interact and to express themselves. It's rooted in an atmosphere in which Avodat Hashem is the focus. Avodat Hashem, personal spiritual growth, is the focus of the evening. It's rooted in, of course, it's historically rooted in the tradition of Yeshivot for the past 100 years, so which proves to come a day not only to celebrate Esther and Mordechai and Haman, but also, especially Purim night, but also a day in which a person expresses himself and his relationship with his chaverim and the like, and it's within a certain cultural context of Israeli religious life. All of this at the moment, gives us the perspective we legitimize it. It doesn't mean that anyone feels uncomfortable should do it. It doesn't mean that in the future we won't change our position. This is the moment. It's more or less what's going on. But it should be done. So what's more? It should be done in a way that's not degrading, it's not Chas V'Shalom endangering, that being said, in other words, we feel that it's at the moment it's an option which we don't want to deny. Many Israelis do feel a need, and there are people who feel a deep need to. You see, probably for a night of the other Bulgarians, because he lives on a long trip. Past 15 years, he comes every Purim night, and it's a pleasure to hear him. Every time he comes with a new chiddush or whatever, and it's always a pleasure to hear him. And if that's that, if you want questions, I'm glad to answer. Let's in a nutshell where I can. Right, in a nutshell, a very large nutshell, yeah. What I think.
I agree with almost everything you said. Just a couple things. The yeshiva does decide to allow drinking, but it doesn't just allow drinking, it also facilitates drinking. It also opens up free alcohol for anyone who wants, which leads to many good sod coming out, but at least from my experience last year, while yes, in the Chadar Ohel HaKatan there was a lot of good sod, out in the outside, what are you going to call it, the outside area, there was a lot of bad sod. There was Most people were, even in Chadar Ohel HaKatan, talk about Talmud Akim, like, I personally, you're right, I never experienced a lot of drunk people around me. And it wasn't, like, scary, or just surprising, like, that a human being acted in these ways. And it wasn't, like, a small minority, it was a lot of people. There was a person who passed out and had to be taken off on a cart. There was not two of these people that drank too much and threw up. It was in the double digits. There was the kid who, on the way back to his room, got down and bowed down and worshipped the tree. Also, meaning on the Erev Shabbos on Friday night, we talked about Amalek. We talked about how Amalek is the animalistic instinct in all of us, and what separates humans from animals are the Matzorim. And I think that's perfect. Meaning that's exactly why. That's why I was always surprised by this praising of lowering the barriers, because what most people, not most people, I don't know, most too much of too many. I don't think it's a tiny minority of people. When the drinking is facilitated affirmed, they lower those matzrim, and it's in not a good way. It's in the symbolic way where the barriers are lowered and they act like animals. I just love that last year there were things that were irresponsible, meaning the yeshiva served both wine and beer, which is just not a good idea for people to drink together because they just don't mix well together. So I know that the yeshiva the yeshiva made the decision that to trust the Talmidim, but in light of certain things, do you think, like, how close do you think the yeshiva is to changing its, you know, stance, because in not trusting the Talmidim as much as they currently do?
I'm busy asking two separate questions. Any other questions?
Considering the Ikar Tehuv is to drink during the Suda, why do we drink Wednesday night?
Okay, so.
I understand the point, but how does this all relate to the ideas, the major ideas of Purim? Hashkachat Hashem, Sechirat Amalek, the project in general. How did all this lightheadedness, so to say, relate to the. To the greater ideas, philosophical ideas of what
Purim
is all about.
Okay, I'll start with the last two and then I'll get back to yours. Even though kind of logically they're questions, but after you, logically the questions are first. In a sense, it looks like this, broadly speaking, but your question, I would say the following. I guess my connection. Never need one sicha, but it means, you know, at the end of the day, you could say we celebrate Atzalah, you know, sicha b'sarayayim, we celebrate Atzalah, and if you think about wine, as we said, it's Rasulta, it's joy, I think wine is coke. So you celebrate, you know, you make a festive meal with wine and the like. However, the real answer, which is common to both questions, is what happened in Shivot in the past 100 years or so. Yeshivot, I have no idea how it began historically, even though, if I remember, there are many already stories and testimonies from the Loshin's 19th century. Essentially, Yeshivot, the word the societies, I feel very close, and Yeshivot, to a large degree, based upon a very youthful society, on the one hand. On the other hand, with a very clear hierarchy as well. Now, some point, and what's my, I can't tell you where and when it began, but I still began to rush when and how. What happened is that Purim basically took on an added role. It took the role not only of celebrating Mordechai v'Esther, which remains, it took on the second role of allowing interaction, and since Purim was a lighthearted day in many other respects, allowing interaction between Talmidim and amongst other Talmidim and Talmidim Rabbein. Purim took on simply an additional. An additional role. In a sense, you're right. It's peripheral to the original idea of Chag. It's simply, at the moment, it contains a dual role. One is to celebrate the Nes Hatzalah, and that's the Megillah and the like. And the other, in other words, and particularly at night, I'll be being during the day, it's simple, it counts as the day. So Purim night took on a separate role, which is more, if you want, in the yeshiva world, and it took on a role of allowing people to express themselves and to try to reach them for their inner selves, independent of the other point. So, in some sense, you're right. This is the added element which Purim has. Now, to the other question. Look, it's always basically two questions. One is, what's yeshiva's policy? Is it changing it? The other one was basically a sense of criticism of what's going on at the present. There's always this dialectic between lowering barriers and deriving negative impulses and positive ones. I agree, that's what I said before. The vast majority of the year, we try to maintain these barriers, and for very good reasons. Nevertheless, it's a point. I do believe there's a dialectic here at work. We do have positive powers. So before, we have the whole year round, we don't. In Yom Kippur, we do. So part of the reason, because Yom Kippur is a day which is better designed, was it's not just Yom Kippur, because of its whole atmosphere and Kedusha, so people will be more careful. Yom Kippur is more appropriate for Tahara idea than the rest of the year. So yes, it is a dialectic. I do believe though that like the verses before that's the quote about the 16,000 minus 16,000 Garmidim. Without attempting to, in other words, to be only intellectual, without attempting ever to tap into more impulsive and instinctual kochot, something will be missing. I think it's when you raise a child, or in other words, when you get married and then you raise children, you'll see that a crucial element of relating to your wife and to your children is also the ability to express yourselves through these elements, and not only so of course over there what we come to the fore would be your positive impulses, your laws of love, and not your egocentric, but rather your altruistic, or at least altruistic towards your wife and children sentiments. But you need these sentiments to be expressed, not only we talk in yeshiva day and night, how important it is to have a chavrusa with your child, how important it is to study with your children. But nevertheless, I guarantee to you that if you only study with your children and you won't play ball with them and you won't go to yule with them, and when they're 5 years old, you won't go down a slide with them, so you have a big problem relating to your children. So we have to allow ourselves both elements. And I would say, that look, in the States they do it differently. So instead of drinking with your Talmidim, say play baseball with your Talmidim. So you do it like Bummer instead of Purim. But it's the same idea. The idea is you want to relate to your Talmidim in a way which illustrates other elements. If in Israel I would play baseball with high school students, you know, I'd be fired. In America, if I wouldn't, I'd be fired. In other words, it's part of the same idea, which is you have to relate not only you can't only relate through reason. You have to, so you have a certain danger, yes. And I said before, I really believe that people should ask themselves well, and ask themselves very thoroughly. Should look in the mirror long and hard and ask themselves, do they really have it within them? Look, about what you mentioned. To be honest, I'm sure every year we have people who have good sodot and less good sodot. I wouldn't say malek. That's the only word I'll erase from your comments. There may be other things. They may be aggressive. They're not malek. But at any rate, even if we... I'm sure every year you have yesh v'yesh. There are always people who, if you want to overestimate the maturity or underestimate the need for maturity... I'm sure it happens every year. I still think the vast majority is, or if you want, the gist of the evening justifies it. I still think also that I still believe there's a big difference between Jews and Americans in this. Maybe I'm mistaken, but I still do believe that what we see is somewhat different, and that being one yeshiva, we're not going to say Americans have different restrictions than Israelis, but I do believe that there are basic differences in this regard, and it may very well be that the mindset, if you want the avira, the education of avira, should be calibrated accordingly. What's more so? I assume that there are also such things. At the moment, what I observed last year, and I can't speak for myself at the moment because I haven't consulted others, I still think that on the whole, Yitzah, Hefseido, Bischaro. But so we'll have to monitor that. Regarding, it may be a good idea, and I think we'll consider, I don't know. I'm guaranteed that we'll do it. To have someone just see what's going on outside and try to help people Well, yeah, but I do believe at the end of the day, it's the role of Chavirim to do most of the work, to help people realize the limitations. You should have supervised from above X amount, but it's the other thing I would mention is, listen, the yeshiva offer, but bear in mind, I agree with you. I said, I mean, I'm not, I don't choose the menu, but I agree on that point. Regarding the yeshiva providing alcohol, look, the yeshiva provides, the assumption is that the yeshiva provides people with all their food. We provide people with soup and then gefilte fish. So I'd probably provide them with wine also. In other words, we should consider how much, maybe how much, but per se that it's not an attempt to be like, it's simply part of the yeshiva's providing everything else. You know, we provide free laundry. So if you assume that they're probably part of the food is drinking, so that per se doesn't bother me that much. Would we consider, it's like this, if this was only American yeshiva and there weren't Israelis here, I suspect we probably would be considering change of policy. Because before, I really think that the American mindset, and also don't forget the age of the Americans, the age and the life experience is different. The Israelis, we're not talking about 18 to 19, we're talking about 18 to 28. And we're not talking, and we're also talking about Israelis, at least many of them, you know, have gone through the army and have a whole different life experience. And when all said and done, the army and even the knowledge that you go into the army is a maturing factor. And so I think there's, I mean, I don't want to sound, I want to say more negative, but I do believe it's a factor. It was that the army makes a big difference in this regard. And if we were only American yeshiva, I think there's a good chance we would change. Because then we'd be yeshiva for 18, 19-year-olds who have come from a certain cultural context. It would be a different policy. But as I said before, I think people coming to Israeli yeshiva with... this is part of accepting it. Israelis don't like some of the things Americans do, and Americans don't like some of the things Israelis do. That's, I think, part of learning to live and to interact with them is exactly this. Practice, okay. I take your metaphor, and to me, this reinforces. I think reinforces what we're doing. In other words, the simplest thing is not going to you at all. Why make it to you, and then have to go and then do this long list, you know, of all kinds of safety instructions and safeguards and the like? Stay at home and solve the problem. It was why in the army for every exercise and every targil. So they always say, "Imishu echad yipatza, kol haimul lo shaveh." That's foolish. It's Edelman paid miluim. He just said, it's crazy. If that was the case, we'd all stay home and then we'd close down the army. It's not true. We do train, we do exercise, because we believe the benefit outweighs the dangers. So obviously we take all the safeguards and we try to minimize, but then we believe that the activity itself has more benefit than loss. The cost, you know, in the benefit loss analysis, we believe it's beneficial. Because you guys say, why is your camp simply not going on a trip? And they could say, you know, it's dangerous, and then so instead we'll play checkers all day long. So the point is that at the end of the day, we believe that by going out to nature, by having activity, by tapping into the non-intellectual elements of life, you gain. So you try to minimize. So I agree we should minimize. But I really think at the end of the day, the same reason applies. The cost benefit, I could say, I think 100% certain. Shvat HaRetzion, if you would look at the yeshiva of the past 40 years, and you would take away Yom Kippur, it wouldn't be the same yeshiva. If you take away in many other days, I say like this: you take away the Chanukah and the Sukkot, it'd be the same yeshiva. You take away, the Tish Chassanim, it would also be the same yeshiva. You take away Purim, it wouldn't. In other words, the yeshiva without minus Purim in the past 40 years would be a different yeshiva. It would be missing many vital elements. And so,
it's not the principle. See, that what should, the speaking of the Tzilum should be loud, of course. But there's so much clock in the Tzilul, which we do periodically down here. Printing, many people don't have experience with it. More so than you talk, more so than education and help in the performance of that.
Okay, so I mean, I think, it makes sense.
Maybe more, of course, the board issue should be.
So I'm going back to the same issue of how much supervision. If we're putting things on the table, the whole American program is not for supervision of the Israeli program. And that has advantages and disadvantages. You could say it's true not only about the drinking, it's true about coming to share, it's true about many other things. The programs are designed differently. Part of the reason is cultural, part of the reason is because the American program is designed for a 1 or 2 year program. The Israeli program is designed as a 5 or 6 year program, and it's not only about Purim, it's about the whole year round. The whole program is designed differently. One of the reasons that American parents have different expectations in this program, the Israeli rabbeim and Israeli parents have in this program. I think it's part of the more general discussion, and it's true about hitchhiking, it's true about many other things. Israelis have different standards, it's different culture, the culture is different acceptance, if you want, of I also think that the maturity issues are different, so once more I have no problem whatsoever. The American program wants to put in its own safeguards, but I think for the Israelis, I do not want, or do not think it's proper, to basically try to recreate the Israeli program with the image of the American program, because it's a different program and a different mindset.
Well,
there's
actually that spoke about life, about breaking down barriers and building relationships between people and other people, between people and God. However, the Russian Shia must recognize the other side of breaking down barriers, being away, destroying relationships between people. And I know from my personal experience last year, there are several people who I remind people to look at the same way after seeing them on partners, or having interactions with them on partners. And I think the Russian Shia has to recognize the other side as well.
I think this continues a conversation from last year, and to a certain degree. I'll just say the following. I think to a certain degree what bothered you was not when you spoke to them, it's how you observed them. And I think what bothered you to a large degree was observation. It was not dialogue. If you had gone over to people and spoken to them, you would have felt differently towards them. It's rather, because I think you came with a certain set of assumptions about propriety and when and behavior standards and the like. And therefore you felt that they weren't properly, that the dignity you expected of them was violated and the like. I don't think, what I spoke about was dialogue with people, was talking to people, was interacting with them. And what's work? All I can say is, if you feel out the one that's right, talk, don't observe and then be critical, but try to talk, try to interact with them and see what's coming out. In other words, forget about the externals. Try to see what's going on inside them, and try to interact with them as such. It's like a command. If you don't feel like that, it could be better not to. Don't interact. Don't observe. I think try to judge in the context of their the place there from not the place where you are necessarily. That's what I tried to say before. I think that absolutely indeed the expectations are different, but what's more, every person at the end of the day understands what he thinks of right and wrong. And I can tell you, I think they have different different contexts and different standards than what you're expecting, because each one's a product of his of the society he's growing up in. I just think we're just like repeating ourselves in a sense. Yeah, that's just time to use that book. So
this is an issue that some of us have discussed on, but that we shouldn't address directly. As I know from my personal experience last year, that as the Nasiba reached its end, 12:00 in the morning, there were many individuals like myself who hadn't had anything to drink and who had enjoyed the Nasiba very much. And as they were walking back to their rooms, they found many of their friends, both Israelis and Americans, lying on the ground, passed out drunk, and helped them back to their rooms, and ended up going to bed much, much later, and were able to get up many in the morning, was much, much more difficult because of that. I know personally, it was an Israeli, my pina, who I, by my hand, helped him into the bed on his tafunk, who would fall on the floor and hurt himself very seriously. So I'm wondering if you discuss what is the responsibility of people who choose, for whatever reason, not to drink, to help or not to help those people who made, and it's not a few, many people who made the poor decisions. Is there a responsibility to pick them up off the ground? And, I mean, obviously, it's in the chesed to spend more of our time. Or is there a responsibility to say, look, they made a silly decision, they made an inappropriate decision, they're going to have to suffer the consequences?
That's a general question. The person, the onion knocks on my door and he doesn't work because he doesn't feel like working, prefers to knock on my door. In other words, that's a general question. My father wrote a whole article on it. It's called Soti Sodimo. Yishtatfutam Kevel Gimut Chasadim. I'll be glad to give you a copy. And broadly speaking, if you want to sound quicker, take one Ksut of Samach Zayin. Read the one Ksut of Samach Zayin with Bet. And the Gemara's conflicting stories about people who aren't willing to help themselves, should you help them or not? The basic principle, I understand it, is very simple. If the person is in danger, so you help him whether or not it's his fault. If the person is not in danger, it's a different story. In other words, if the consequences are irreversible, you're going to help him whether or not he's to blame. If the consequences are not, that's a different story. It's like if you were stuck in the floor instead of in the top bunk, so nothing would have happened. Maxim, he would have had a backache. He would have learned a lesson. If you looked outside and it was raining, so then that's a different story. But what's that? I refer to those sources, and but I think this is part of a general question, which is very relevant day in day out.
The situation that exists, people lying on the floor, is directly facilitated by the yeshiva providing help.
Providing floors.
And aside from the more general question, which I agree this is a general question, is it fair for the yeshiva?
So that's why we're going back to that. I tell my feeling is at least those are asking, I know, but those are not asking. Those who are asking basically assume it's a negative phenomenon. And now the question is, should it be tolerated or should it be banned? What's more, the whole point of Sikha was that it's not necessarily a negative phenomenon. If you believe it's negative, so obviously you shouldn't drink alcohol. Obviously, you know, you should do things differently. If you believe that there's something positive to be derived from this, it just has to be done. I quote the Gemara I mentioned in the beginning. Mi'uto yafeh v'rubo ra. Mutoyefe means what you can tolerate and remain in control of yourself. I mean, I mentioned it before, I'll mention it again. A person should only drink if he can control himself. If he can't control himself, he shouldn't drink anything. If you can't control yourself after two drops, so drink one drop. If you control yourself after two cups, drink one cup, etc., etc. But the assumption is that Mutoyefe. If Mutoyefe, you want to provide people the opportunity for that mute. If you feel that all is negative, so obviously you should be providing anything, but it's like candy to my kids. Sure, no, if you said, why provide candy to your kids? You know, they eat too much candy, they gorge on candy, it's bad for the teeth, it's bad for their, it's bad for their self-discipline, etc., etc. So you're right. So I don't want to, so I don't give them candies like this. But on the other hand, the conclusion is not to give no candy whatsoever. The conclusion is to give candy that's, you know, that can make good use of. The same is true here also. So it's, the basic assumption, your basic assumption, as you said, is basically not to drink anything. So that's the case. You shouldn't be giving anything. Of course not. But if the assumption is that it can serve a purpose, just the purpose has to be done properly, the question of supervision and the like is a question. But why the Shiva gives wine? The answer is, same we give wine for Kiddush. We believe that wine for Kiddush serves a purpose. We believe that wine and Purim serves a purpose. That's the answer. So if it's too much, I understand. The person comes and says, you're giving too much, maybe give less, or maybe stop a certain hour. That's very detailed. But the basic idea, why you should have served me, because it's for the same reason we serve food and the like. Okay, let's go after enough.
I there should have mentioned that the different cultural society, so maybe it should be different. Because in this sikha you mentioned the positives, negatives, what to be concerned about, there's a mature approach to it. And that, but I know you gave a sikha to the Israelis, and I was there also, and you mentioned the positive side, but it wasn't as comprehensive. It didn't really stress this part of don't go past where you can't control yourself or any negative. And I don't really think that's cultural. I mean, there's no harm in saying this can be positive, but in a certain light.
You're right. I just think, I mean, the point is, the Israelis got a different sikha, because I really think in a different place, you know, it was a much more limited crowd, it was a limited time space, exactly because it reflects these reasons. And over here, you know, the American staff spoke to me about it, but we spoke about this a month ago, and I said, when I opened up, when I spoke to Rabbi Milosh Tshuva last week, I had half the crowd. So that means that everyone here is so concerned, but Israelis, half of them didn't show up because it doesn't bother them. It's a whole different, mindset. It's a different group. That's one of the main points. As I said before, it's you just have to in a sense recognize that it's a different. To be sure, I wanted to make one final point, which somehow as you were talking, I forgot it. I don't know. Just the following. As I said in the beginning, the basic point of Purim is to be over the Hashem. It's kim over kibul. Basic point of Purim is to arrive at your inner self, to whatever means it is, to focus on over that Hashem. And a person should certainly drink only if he feels in control. If he feels chas v'shalom. To drink, that person can't wake up for tomorrow morning for Megillah, for the Suda, the mitzvahs during the day and not at night. And if a person thinks about drinking for 2 hours at night and then still for the next 22 hours that he's doing a mitzvah, he's obviously in error. And the best point is to be responsible and to trust your maturity, but on the other hand, don't feel so demonized and don't, in other words, calm down. It's. You know, you still hear celibate even though you lost the respect of a few people, and it's, what I'm trying to say is, even if you disagree with some of what's going on with the Israelis, keep things in proportion. This is not the most crucial decision of the whole year. Maximum it's machlokes Hashem Shamayim. And, I think we have to have the ability to have machlokes Hashem Shamayim. No one who is encouraging or facilitating drinking is doing this because he thinks it's a negative and the like. He thinks it's positive, so you may disagree with him, and you can come from you can make different claims. I have no problem with that. But let's just recognize this Mahal Shem Shamayim. Don't feel so threatened. Don't feel so so tense. Like it's used tension. I really think there are. There are, the gravity issues in life. I can, Let's just keep things in, you know, a certain context and not that blow them out of proportion as well. One final point. My father in previous, once upon a time, if you talk about proving the yeshiva, my father used to, until he moved to Aron Shul 5 years ago, more than 5 years actually, he and Rav Mital Zatzal used to entertain all yeshiva in Yerushalayim at their homes. In the past years they moved to Alon Shvut, he used to have a siddur with the shir. Since this year he's not giving shir anymore, he doesn't have a shir yomi anymore, so he decided to go back to the old format. Basically, not a siddur, but he invited the whole yeshiva to his house every morning. I highly recommend, even though I'm no Gebedev, right? 10:30 to 12:30. I highly recommend. It's an excellent opportunity to interact. It's an excellent opportunity to have Gadol Shimushayu Termi Limuda. I mentioned before that the yeshiva would never be the same at Purim. I had in mind, to no small amount, the hours of Mital's house on Purim in previous years, and it's. I highly recommend to go each, you know, Mital had his style, the father, Yibadul Chaim Rukim has his style, but I highly recommend, especially he wasn't the Shabbazach because of the snow, so I highly recommend doing that. He doesn't drink, so you don't have to be concerned. I highly recommend doing that. It's a good opportunity to interact, and such opportunity should be utilized and not lost.